This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Basic Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, this is the show trainers listen to, and we are glad to have you with us as well on this Wednesday evening. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcoming everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. Another fun show planned for you here tonight over the course of the next hour, and we're going to begin with a trainer who, quite frankly, was destined to be in the horse industry. And he comes from a long line of horsemen, not just on the training side, but on the jockey side as well. And we're going to visit with the current leading trainer at Presque Isle Downs in Pennsylvania. He has sent out 110 winners since beginning his training career back in 2005. And if there was ever a person meant to be in racing, it is indeed trainer Wayne Rice, who joins us now on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And when I say that you were meant to be in this business, it's because if you go back through your lineage, you find horsemen both on the riding side and the training side, as I mentioned. And I almost needed a scorecard to keep track as I was getting ready for the show.
I've had numerous people that their main question is, where do I fit in the family, Rice family? Which one am I, and where do I come from?
Well, take me back to the beginning and fill me in on how this whole love of horse racing came about for Wayne Rice.
Hard for anybody to believe. Clyde Rice and Wayne Lucas met in a little one-room schoolhouse in northern Wisconsin in the seventh grade. And they both ran around Wisconsin at that time and became school teachers. And Wayne went one direction and Dad kind of went another one. And we've been marching through this game ever since.
Wow. Wow. Did your dad coach basketball with Wayne too?
Nope. Wayne was a basketball coach and my father was a wrestling coach.
Oh, really? At the same high school?
Nope. I think it was different high schools.
Okay. Yeah, because Wayne was
They were in the same small town area where they stayed together, kind of in the racing venue in northern Wisconsin, is backyard barbecues and little fairs, and they'd go to Lincoln, Nebraska, and various other places, as Bill Mott was saying, out in that direction, and places that only happen in the summer on weekends.
Wow. When you think about two trainers like your dad, Clyde, and of course Wayne Lucas, coming out of that particular part of the country, you don't often associate Wisconsin as the hotbed for thoroughbred trainers, but you know, heck, it certainly worked out for both of those individuals.
The Beatty family, Todd Beatty, Dick Beatty, Tom Beatty, the Beatty family, which is Jessica Capitelli is a Beatty, they were all 2 miles away in the woods. The Helmbrecht family is from there. The Margraf family, there's a pretty good contingent that their roots are based back there.
How do you become hooked on horse racing in that part of Wisconsin?
They started out buying horses on Friday night at auctions, little public auctions for $100 or $200, buying a rank stud colt and castrating him, shoeing him, riding him, getting him broke and selling him as a broke gilding on Sunday and beating the rubber check to the bank on Monday. It was just horses. My grandfather, when he was born, it was before the cars. He was born in 1908 that his horse and buggy were the transportation they used when they were kids, and they had teams of draft horses plowing and baling the fields and the farm, where horses were first before anything else. And as school teachers, the prospect of better life and better money wasn't there, so they would go to the summer fair meets and weekend deals, and, hey, we can make money doing that, and went to doing it. We went to Assiniboia Downs back in the 60s, moved to Waterford Park in the early 70s as a move to the big leagues, was going to Waterford Park.
And wow.
Then Dad did not like the Industrial Valley where Mountaineer Park or Waterford Park sits or raising a family, so we moved over to Penn National, which is out in the beautiful countryside around the Harrisburg-Hershey area. And we spent about 15, 16 years there and then ended up migrating down to northern Florida to Ocala, where most of us are based out of there, except Linda. Linda has stayed for 20 years in New York City plying her trade, and I'm proud of her immensely for what she's done. But I live in Florida, and I live in Florida, and I have made the decisions in my life to spend the winters where it's warm. I don't need to do the cold anymore. I come north to Keeneland and Presque Isle and play in the summer. But I love this place because it closes the end of September, and I might hit Keeneland on the way home, but that time of year is time for me to go back south and become a wimp.
I don't blame you one bit. I grew up in western Massachusetts, and the one thing I don't miss about Massachusetts, now that I live in Kentucky, are those cold winters. So I can relate to where you're coming from, Wayne, with looking for the nice weather in the wintertime down in Florida. And you mentioned Linda Rice, who is among the top trainers that we have in the sport today. Take me back through the number of different Rice family members that are involved in horse racing right now.
My father, Clyde Rice, has four children. Brian being the oldest, Wayne the second, that's me, my brother Kurt, and Linda. Kurt was runner-up for leading apprentice jockey in the nation in about 79. I rode races from 76, 77, 78, and retired before I turned 18. I'd gotten a little too big, and Linda was the baby. And my brother Brian was just a hair too big for that game. Brian, to this day, has a monster business in Ocala that he is a stunning horseman doing yearlings to two-year-olds for the Pinhooking game, and we send some to the races. And with what I've been doing at the race in the last couple of years, he's getting a little more itch to come play this game a little with me, because you spend all winter manicuring a toy and getting him dialed in and learning everything about him and teaching him all the things that he needs to know to do the game. And then you hand him away to somebody else. You'd love to see the artwork to see how well you did it, getting it right, getting it to be perfect to run. So there's four children on my dad's side of the family. My dad's brother, Don, had five children. Brett is in Florida. Kim Wingo was a jockey, one of the top female jockeys in the country. She's married. Was married to Bobby Wingo, another jockey. Her sister, Tori, was a jockey. She's married to Pat Hopple. He is in Ocala. He is a Hopple's Horse and Cattle Company. He's a pretty prominent pinhooker of yearlings to two-year-olds and does a lot of the farm work for my sister, Linda. And they have Kitty Cheeks, is another one of the sisters, married to Joe Cheeks. She is here at Presque Isle Downs racing. And her two children, Jared Cheeks and Katie Cheeks, are both here as horse trainers at Presque Isle.
Wow.
Where else did I miss? My cousin Jill, which is my dad's sister's daughter, is married to John Stevens, which is Stevens Thoroughbreds. They do a lot of work for Christophe Clement, doing yearlings to two-year-olds and a bunch of sales work. They're also based out of Ocala.
Wow. That's quite a family tree. And then, of course, you are the sire of a couple of sons, your daughter, Taylor, all involved in the sport with you. Tell me about that.
I am a very lucky man. I moved to Florida, and I was pinhooking for 20 years, and I got to stay home and train a multitude of horses, breaking yearlings to two-year-olds. I'm a better horse trainer now than I was when I left the races 20 years ago, and I got to play with my children. I have played every game, every sport, everything with my children. We did rodeo sports. Team roping was one of the main ones we did. And because of it, my children ride immaculately, and I can say that with confidence that anybody that wants to grade me on that, My children ride well, very, very well. Taylor's the oldest. She went on to Florida State and went to college. And you get a little bit stuck in the middle of college trying to say, why am I here going to college? Because you're supposed to. Get an education, make yourself more worldly, finish that project. I'll fix your world when you're done with that. And we brought her back here to Presque Isle Downs and got her back in the tack where she had missed for about 5 years, and it just took her a couple years, and she's back singing and giggling. Looks just as comfortable on a horse as ever. Kevin is the next one in line. He's probably 25 at the moment. He won a pair of $100,000 stakes for my father last year, one with a two-year-old and one with an older horse here at Presque Isle, and raced around the country. He is having a pretty stunning year again this year. He's probably a 25-year-old at the moment. He's a good blacksmith. I was a blacksmith for a number of years, but if you are in this business training horses, the feet are one of the prime things of your horse that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if without the feet and without proper everything, you will destined to struggle a bunch. And then the youngest one is Adam. Adam is probably, he's only a year and a half younger. They're like 26, 25, and 23 or somewhere in that range.
Okay.
And he's a pretty snappy horse trainer to the tune that he spanked me again last night. He made a special aid here at Presque Isle.
Yeah, what's that like? What's that like when the kids actually beat you in a race, Wayne?
I'm not sure. I enjoy it. I could hate it on the left hand. I enjoy it on the right. And I tell people our game. We are competitors. We're not enemies. Even with my competitors are on the ground. So in the playing with my children, well, it's a little tough. My pocketbook can stand the defeat a little more than their young pocketbook can stand the defeat. They could really use the money more than I could. But if it came easy, it's not as rewarding. And you wouldn't feel as confident about what you had done. And they are struggling through it the hard way, and their years are getting better and better as they go. And it's really neat to watch them blossom right now.
Well, I'm sure you can remember one day very fondly, and it was probably a day that you were very proud to be their father. It was the day that Taylor actually rode her first winner at Presque Isle a couple of years ago. It was in 2013. She did it on a horse trained by her brother, Kevin, and owned by their grandfather, as you just mentioned, Clyde. That had to be a very proud moment for you.
It's another one of those noted, really neat days of life. Absolutely need to go watch it. And the smiles on the faces in Wind Picture are irreplaceable. And we'll be able to look at them for decades, if not centuries, down our family lineage, because I think the next generations will probably still be playing with horses.
Visiting with trainer Wayne Rice here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wayne, as a former rider, you know how dangerous that profession can be. What's it like for you as a dad to watch your kids? Of course, you had to watch the boys, but now you're there watching Taylor, to watch your little baby girl go out there and compete on the racetrack and ride races. What's that like for you as a dad?
I am fortunate enough that I am 54 years old and dead fit and still exercise and breeze horses every morning, that I have gotten to breeze horses with and against both Taylor, Kevin, and Adam recently, and it's enjoyable, and I don't have any fear. They're safer on a horse than they are driving a car down the highway. Absolutely to a T, that this game, the people we play with are all talented and professional, and they've got as much to lose as anybody else. And there's a bunch of artists out here playing with these horses that I feel are safer on a horse than they are anywhere. And I understand the risks. All of my good friends are players in this game, and tragedies do happen. But I would rather them living life to the fullest and playing this game than just existing.
What advice did you give to Taylor when she started riding and to the boys when they wanted to be trainers?
Don't know that there was any advice. It was the natural, as you had said, the natural occurrence of happening. Kevin had qualified to go to the high school national finals in team roping in rodeo sports at 15 years old, which is a horse game riding a horse. And Taylor and Adam, those were the games we played in our backyard at a national level in rodeo sports. And let's just go race horses.
Yeah.
It was just the next step. Nothing else. They're buying their own toys. They're buying their own yearlings. And I'm thrilled to be in the game right now, playing it like I am, to show them and remind them it's not the cost of the toy. It's how well you've done at manicuring him and buffing him up and helping him to meet his potential, that you can take a $1,700 toy and spank the world. And they've been doing it around here recently, and I enjoy that a bunch, because every horse, unfortunately, will wear out or run down the road. So we have to go find new ones. And the fact that they can go to the yearling sales and have been in that game with us, we buy a pile of yearlings every fall. And our family has probably broke 200 yearlings a year for the last 20 years. So you get to look at what conformationally will hold up, what physically looks like it will outrun the others. Over and over, you can see it and you can test it, and we've got to test it. And then every now and then the oddball jumps in there that looks like an old crow, and he just runs like the wind. So we have all of them, but you have to do your homework. And I start my day every morning. They open the track here at 6 o'clock. I don't have to turn my head to the left or right. I can say, good morning, boys. They are opening the racetrack with me every day. At 6 o'clock, if you're 5 minutes late, you miss them. They're in front of you. It is so they're, you have to put your homework in this game to get the results. And they are diligently doing that and reaping the rewards, because you can tell I can tell as a dad watching them, how are they doing? Are they wilting? Are they struggling? I see a swagger in their walk as they stroll across the barn area going to get the next horse. And it's neat to watch.
Yeah, that philosophy is serving you very well right now. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you are the leading trainer currently, as we sit here on July 8th of 2015, currently the leading trainer at Presque Isle Downs. Wayne, what is it about your approach to picking out young horses that's allowed you to have so much success?
I have no clients. I am the owner of every horse. So when I go to the sales ring, there are always marginal things on horses. At that age at buying yearlings, they're not fully developed. They're not complete packages yet. I want to find the diamond in the rough. So that is a seat-of-your-pants, gut-form decision. And then you have some vet work that you're looking at. In my lifetime of experience of reading x-rays and some of the analyzations, I can go to the ring and make that little comparison between talent, vet work, and what are they making me pay for him? And I can do that bite that bullet myself. I don't have to have a conference call somewhere in front to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take some of the marginal x-rays home, and those horses are fine. An athlete's an athlete, and we all have little things in us that don't look good on paper, but they run like the wind. And I think that is what allows me to buy more horses and succeed with them. And I will have failures also. Some of the vet work doesn't hold, but there's a pile of horses that x-ray perfect that either aren't sound or just can't run enough. Let me see the shine that makes him run first, the talent, the sachet in his walk, the strut, the balance that I see. Then I'll do the other marginal pieces, and that's all got to be done in a matter of 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes as he goes from the outside ring to the inner ring to the sales ring. And then you've got to jump or not jump. And you are either the king or the goat right there in 15 seconds, because after you buy him, now you got to go prove yourself right or wrong. And I think that I own all of them, and my children are biting in themselves and buying their own, that when it is you are completely in charge of everything, you get all of the rewards and you get all the penalties. It makes you concentrate harder and focus harder.
How long does it take you to find out if a horse has that it factor, if they can really run once you get them home from the sales?
Sometimes you can feel it the first time you get on them, that, wow, he dances. This one dances better than the others. But that is a very tricky maneuver from fall till spring, because they're all of different ages. They're all at different growth levels, just like children. So, and some of them, our market and the economy has been so strong that these horses, a lot of them have been stalled up, sales prepped, so to different fitness levels, and they can lie to you a little bit. You think you're buying a raw baby out of the field. We're not buying very many of them anymore like we were 20, 25 years ago. They're not helping these horses. I buy my group of yearlings, and I bring them home, and I turn them out in 10-acre paddocks in groups of five or six, and I give them about 60 days to get back out to being full-grown athletes living in the schoolyard and fix whatever the human race has done wrong to him for the last 60 or 90 days of his life. Either in an athlete is not made in a stall. You can't have a yearling have all of the tendon strength, sinew strength, every little muscle and ligament, and learn how to play and run on the backyard when they're all stalled up 23 hours a day and only get outside for 30 minutes to 60 minutes. It does not constitute an athlete. So I bring mine home, turn them all out in groups of five or six so that they play. So by the time I ease my way through the breaking process, the product I bought has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see the fat ones will have gotten skinny and leaned down because they run like banshees in the field. My big joke at the farm, the more I feed, the more they eat, the more I feed. The more they eat, the more they run. The more they run, the more they eat. So by the time I get around to Christmas time, they're eating like starved Indians, but they're also running 10 miles a day or 20 miles a day in the field that they train themselves, living outside in the wild, more than what I could do in a stall. And we have to feather our way till April or May, because if he's really talented in October, November, December, who cares? There's no money. We don't want to see it then, because we'll tear our toy up. We have to wait till it's race time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's a very patient approach on your part. And quite frankly, Wayne, that's more of an old school approach in this sport, isn't it?
I have been told that my approach is the very old school way, or an archaic way that a lot of people can't do. There's you are worried about a scratch on the horse because it devaluates him, but you're taking away the real grit and the real guts. They learn that on the playground. They learn it outside. I can look out my picture window in my house and watch them boiling up and down the field, running and bumping each other and biting hard at each other. And it's over and over again all day long in the heat, in the rain, in the rest of that. That's making men out of them. That's putting the grit and the toughness that we don't make horses run. We don't teach them to run. It's either in there or it's not. And I really think that the top end of our game is negating a lot of that in our horses, because they're stalled up stall animals for too much of their life.
Wayne Rice on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wayne, just believe it or not, this has really flown by. Just about 4 minutes left or so in this interview here on Trainer Talk. But what's next for Wayne Rice? What things do you still want to accomplish, even though you've had so much success already in your career?
It is changing by the day, week, month. I'm enjoying watching my children play and go into this. Each year that I've come to play this, I've expanded my numbers that I bring. I enjoy playing the game, but our game is changing dramatically where I play. My original play here at Presque Isle was to come to Keeneland in April, Presque Isle for the summer, and Keeneland in the fall, because the doors were open. I haven't put my foot in the door at some of the more year-round racetracks because they want more of an obligation. They're not going to let me in there to play when I only want to be there for about 3-4 months and go home. Now, they might let me in there because I am proving to them that I will play hardy enough when I'm there to play. But on the other hand, I, as a trainer and as a human being, I live with a stunning woman that I've lived with for 20 years that has helped me raise my children. She's also my jockey, my girlfriend, my partner, and she's helped me raise these kids. And for the betterment of my life, my sanity, and my relationship, I take the winter off, and I go wander the world to make sure that I have the clarity, the patience, and the desire to come back. And I'll run away from here or do other things to where my itch to get back to my horses gets there, and I come back where I can really help them. I would hate to be the gerbil on the wheel that it's just like a day job and it's just like work. I think that a lot of the people I'm playing with have never gotten off the wheel at all for so long that they don't see the little things to make a horse happy and make him sing, and just little stuff. If he's not happy in that stall, moving, find him a different stall, find him something. What makes him tick? And what makes me tick? I've got a trip to Tahiti for 3 weeks in November. I've got to go to the Caribbean for another 3 weeks after that. And I think it makes me a better man when I come back here to train horses, because they get a break and I get a break.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that.
So this year's hand, that is a good question. I might go to New York. I've been to Woodbine, and I might go there. The other establishments have been calling me, wanting me to come play, and I might go play at the other places. Just haven't decided where yet.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of truth in that. I mean, horses, we talk about that all the time. They need to be freshened up a little bit. They come back even stronger, more focused. Same thing with the human side of things, whether it's an athlete or a horse trainer. You can't be in it necessarily all the time. There has to be a bit of a break. And Wayne, it sounds like you've got that balance now, and things are really going in the right direction. And I want to wish you all the best moving forward, all the best to the kids as well. Really appreciate you being here on this edition of Trainer Talk. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. It is Flair Equine Nasal Strips. I'll send those out to you. And again, can't thank you enough, and all the best moving forward.
See you at the show. We'll
see you there.
Playing.
See you there, my friend. Wayne Rice here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Wow. Some great stuff. Different approach. I really like it. All right, second half coming up next. Stay with us. Of course, it is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton July Sale takes place on Thursday, July 9th in Lexington, Kentucky, and is the number one ranked sale by runners and winners, and the number two ranked sale by grade one winners, graded stakes winners, and stakes horses, ranked second behind only the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sale. This year's July sale begins at 10 a.m., offering 332 yearlings. The sale is immediately followed by the Summer Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale. 2013 and 2014 sale graduates have won no less than 188 races with earnings of over $5.5 million and have already won or placed in 37 stakes races to date. This year's sale will offer more than 100 horses, with the Fasig Tipton website continually updated with features, video replays, DRFPPs, Rogozin sheets, and email alerts. It's the Fasig Tipton July Sale, Thursday, July 9th in Lexington, Kentucky. The number one ranked sale by runners and winners.
And they're off to New York, the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Attention horsemen, Kentucky Downs is proud to announce a record $7.5 million in purses and KTDF money offered at the 2015 race meeting beginning September 5th. Overnight races will offer $120,000 purses for maiden special weight and as much as $130,000 for allowance races, plus three new stakes races and the meet's signature Grade 3 Kentucky Turf Cup offering a $600,000 purse on September 12th. Visit KentuckyDowns.com to download your 2015 condition book today. Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Bayern, toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, toast of New York. Bayern has won it. Bayern got there by a head under Martin Garcia over toast of New York. It's untappable in front. Untappable the leader. Don't tell Sophia flying on the outside. Untappable gonna get there. Untappable has won it. Judy the Beauty sticks her neck out, goes for the wire. On the outside, Better Lucky's catching. Better Lucky, Judy the Beauty. Judy the Beauty, one and a head and eight, thrill it. Main sequence finishing best of all, late run from Twilight Eclipse. But it is main sequence to score. Main sequence is one and a head.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live.